All right. It's really nice to be back. I was here for many years, and still things are pretty recognizable. So thanks for inviting me. What I'm going to talk about is based on joint work with Aldo Riello and Florian Hofmüller, who are still around. So you can talk to them after I leave about this. But of course, any wrong thing in these slides are my own. So, okay, let's get started. Let me summarize first where I'm going to go, so those of you who decide this is not interesting can leave. So, of course, everyone here knows local gauge theories underlie the standard model, and we usually think we understand them pretty well, very well. But I don't know how alone I am in this. I think perhaps not so much. But in the presence of boundaries, I think there are still some things that we need to understand better. So it is true that some problems arise when you have boundaries. Already today, we know some technical difficulties arise. So, for example, in calculations of entanglement entropy for general types of boundaries, and also in computation of another charges, on which I might touch a little bit on further down the road in this talk. And one attempted solution, also from people here at PI, so by Laurent and Will, we're here in the audience, to resolve a lot of these technical problems is to introduce some physical edge modes that appear at any boundary. I will present an alternative resolution, which is not at the same level of development as theirs. They have done more things with it because it's also a bit older. And this alternative resolution requires us to think of theories not in space-time, but in field space or configuration space, right? Having said that, everything in this talk will be classical. I won't really touch on anything quantum here. So no BV formalism or anything like that. But I will perhaps mention some of these things at the conclusions. Right, so I mean, I think the source of the problem is very easy to illustrate. Is that we've heard this many times before, the physical degrees of local gauge theories can be non-local. So you can think of Wilson loops, and there are Wilson loops that are not contained in either region, and therefore, the gauge invariant configuration space doesn't decompose. This is, of course, heuristic. It's an equation with words, not with real symbols, but it's basically, this is something that we've heard before and we all can understand, at least intuitively. And the question crops up, how do we glue regions in a gauge theory, right? And so the challenge, I think, is to have some notion of physical gauge invariant, but for which we can still compose different regions, right? That is the challenge that we need to meet. And as I said before, the new independent degrees of freedom have been proposed, but I will show that they are not necessary for some of these problems, that we can use the fields at our disposal. So essentially, I will repeat the original motivation for a gauge connection, but now in field space. And when I do this, a mathematical object with many of the same properties as the edge modes of Laurent and will emerge. This field space connection form we have called VARPI, just because usually the connection form for principal fiber bundles is called omega, but that's already taken. So we took something close to it, which is this weird omega with a little bar on top. So, you know, when you have a gauge theory, the easiest thing to do is to just gauge fix. You can just gauge fix and you have then a unique representation of your physics. So why not? Why just not do that? And then a gauge is gauge fix description will contain all the physics. And according to Carlo Rovelli, and I think this predates him, we don't do this because we need to couple regions. So the example that he gives, and these are drawings by Aldo, by the way, who's much more adapted doing these things than I am. Suppose you have one fleet of spaceships here, and you have some Lagrangian that takes only includes the difference in velocities of the ship, of all the ships. There's some symmetry that you can rigidly translate all the ships together, and the Lagrangian won't change. And accordingly, you can choose gauge invariant variables by taking the difference of two positions of two ships. And that's all fine, you know, you can describe everything in that squadron of ships with those gauge invariant variables. And then you suppose you have a second squadron and you can do the same, and that's fine. But then if you are in these gauge invariant variables, what happens when the two fleets meet? Right? You cannot, for example, and develop an interaction term of this form or some other form, you cannot express the interaction terms in terms of the gauge fixed variables in each of the two squadrons. So according to Rovelli, you want to coupling between regions requires the retention of gauge variant variables. His word for it is a handle, that gauge is a handle for coupling. He also uses this expression for coupling between different fields, but I won't get too much into this here. Right. So let me give you another analogy. I'm just trying to, you know, overcome my trauma by doing this. So suppose there are two regions in the world. In region one, each region has their own language, has many languages to which they can talk about objects, but you need to know that you're talking about the same object. It's easier to talk the same language, right? So suppose that in region one, there's an edict to only speak Brazilian Portuguese, and in region two, only to speak German. Each can still perfectly communicate internally, so they throw away all the foreign language dictionaries. Everything is described in the same language in each region, but one and two can't communicate if they meet. And this is exactly the same thing that happens if you have gauge fixing, and dictionaries would be the gauge transformations. So some possibility of gauge transformation must be kept if you know ourselves to be provincial. So what happens in field theories? Let's first start with no boundary, so a closed region. You have a gauge transformation here. Now, lambda is my gauge parameter. Mu is the gauge potential, or the electromagnetic potential in this case. I mean, it's 2 in a billion. And suppose I have a gauge fixing condition here. I'm using lambda because it's easier to just use one condition. So this is an Euclidean signature. Not lambda is usually talked about for Young-Mills, but here I'm just using Euclidean signature. So this is, you know, it's like the Lorentz gauge, but for full spacetime in Euclidean signature. It's just so that I only have one condition. In any case, if I change the gauge for AMU, I will only get one solution for the gauge transformation that requires that. Let me show you the physical picture of what I'm talking about. I think everybody knows this, but this is the field space. I have one particular field configuration, right? That is the gauge fixed. This section is the gauge fixing section. And then I start from any element in this orbit. This would be A mu. And then I ask, what is the condition for this gauge parameter to go back to this section, to the gauge fixing section? The orbit should intersect this section only once, right? So, so this is the condition. This is the condition for A lambda to belong to this section that I wrote, and that uniquely solve for lambda in the no boundary case, right? So then you get a unique gauge fixed, which I call here with the superscript F, A mu plus some translation along the gauge orbit. For closed region, so here imagine R, my region R is compact and no boundary, or it's identical to its interior, for example, the S3. The only solution would be that this parameter, the translation parameter, if I start from a gauge fixing, if I start from an A mu that's already on the section, right? The only solution, if I try to find another one that has a different translation along the orbit, is that no, I can't. Well, I can only find a translation that is constant, and that doesn't affect the gauge fixing section, right? Because it's the gradient of lambda that matters for determining AMU. So all that saying, is that gauge-related configurations are mapped to the same gauge-fixed configuration. Right? For closed regions, the gauge-fixed description is completely gauge-invariant. Right? I mean, it's very easy to see here. I started with one of this. I said, OK, if I change it again, or if I change it, is there some other lambda that can also satisfy it? The answer is no. All right. But now, what about for bounded regions? Again, we start with the same gauge-fixing condition. Again, you obtain the same equation, but now, of course, you require boundary conditions. And suppose that I have two different boundary conditions, right? And suppose that they are not, they don't differ by a constant at the boundary. If they differ by a constant, don't differ by a constant in the boundary, I'm going to say that the variation at the boundary of the lambda parameter is not constant. Then I'll obtain two different solutions within the entire region. Right, it's a non, the gauge fixing solution is a non-local. I'm solving an elliptic equation in that case, so the solution is this is a some sort of integrals. So this, what does this mean? Is that if we change the gauge at the boundary, I get different A's. Right, I change the gauge at the boundary, I get different A's. It doesn't behave in the same way as in the case with boundaries. So in this case, gauge-related configurations are not mapped to the same gauge-fixed configuration. And I think it's important to note here that the boundary conditions are usually imposed independently of A. So not in the same way that I imposed the gauge-fixing condition, which was divergence of A equals zero. This is just imposed not as a function of A, it's just to say lambda has some property at the boundary. Okay. So, you know, usually this can be argued to actually be, okay, this is the source of edge modes then, because if each gauge fixed configuration corresponds to a unique physical state, and if the group of gauge transformations with this interior of R here is a subgroup of gauge transformations that has the identity at the boundary, then it would seem that we're left with some extra degrees of freedom, right? Namely, the quotient of all the gauge transformations by the ones that keep the same lambda at the boundary. So I think, you know, if you wanted to, I think you could perhaps translate Donnelly and Friedel's work into these Rovelli's handles kind of thing. But at least for me, it still remains a bit of a puzzle because we hear very often that, you know, gauge freedom, gauge parameters, these are just redundant fluff. It's just descriptive redundancy, right, that we have in the world. So why would it be special at the boundary? What is it? What is happening here? How could it become physical? And this is where our work comes in, I think. So let me now move on to the connection form, general properties, and we'll see a little bit of gluing and an example. Right. So where are we so far?
Yeah, that question is answered.
Well, you have an answer. I will propose a different one. Let's see how it goes. So where, what do we have so far? There seems to be a relationship between inter-regional coupling, right? A non-trivial change of boundary gauge conditions, what I showed here, and boundary gauge degrees of freedom that turn physical, right? This there seems to be this relationship that we have. So what do we want? We want to talk about regional physical processes, but still be able to compose them, right? So the picture that you could have here is that if you have a principal fiber bundle, you know, a lot of people usually say, well, why don't you, you could always go to the reduced space, so just take the quotient. And this is fine if you know the whole world. If you have a closed system, it's fine. But if you go to the reduced space, and then there's another region, you don't know how to couple this anymore. You can't couple the quotients. So you need to have some, what we are going to do basically, a connection form, and this is what to come, is to have some notion of physical, infinitesimal basically, so some notion of horizontal spaces here, that can still be covariant, and so they can still couple to another region, because you still have the flexibility. You're not on the reduced space. All right. So, right, This is what I just said. So we want a decomposition of a process into a physical description part and something that will be flexible for us to couple, right? So the gist of it is, of course, an analogy, the standard story for motivating gauge connection, which I think everybody here knows, is that terms like this are not covariant if the gauge transformation depends on the space-time point, right? So you add some space-time connection so that now this type of derivative is covariant under gauge transformation. Right, so where are we in that analogy? Suppose you have configuration spaces associated to regions, right? So I'm calling this big phi here the fields on the total space. That's why it has no subscript. Phi r is the fields in R, and phi r is in the fields in R bar. You can think of R bar as the, well, as the complement of R, but, well, the closure, because I want them to share a boundary, so the closure of the complement. And before, I already said this in the beginning, and so I guess one of the questions is, how do we allow for transformations of the boundary conditions on lambda? So the easiest way is to actually think of replacing a point-dependent gauge transformation by transformations depending on the configuration, right? So now, this will allow boundary conditions imposed as functions of A. So it's a more unified view with the bulk. And what you demand is gauge covariance for this more general gauge parameters. So gauge parameters such that they can, you can functionally vary them. You can particularly, you can functionally vary them at the boundary. So the analogy to the extending covariance under space-time derivatives is now to extend just the functional derivative in terms of something that will be field space functional covariant derivative. excuse me. So the Wick's mixed dependent notation here is that it can be functionally dependent on A. So it will, but it will still be local in the sense that it's still a function on space-time. So, for example, you could say a Green's function has a mixed dependence on the metric and on the point, or 2 points in that case, actually. But this would, you'd use this mixed dependent, square brackets and round brackets. So here's the picture, and a field space is a principal fiber bundle, so there's a lot in it. What do I want to say? So here, this is the picture that I wrote there, is the field space. Each point here, that we, this again, well, this is in our paper, but it's Aldo's wonderful craft. And so this is the field space. Each point here corresponds to a whole choice over the manifold. And if you go upwards in the orbit, you go to one that would be related on the manifold. And for each, so this is phi, is a general field. Now I'm moving, it's a field value. So let's say a section over vector bundle over M, the vector bundle is W here. G is just the gauge parameter. Again, it's one per point. So it's really, it's a full gauge change. And it will be generalized to depend on the fields as well because of the properties that we want to keep. And psi is just the infinitesimal version. And what's psi hash? If I have a gauge transformation, it generates some translation on the field space itself, some vertical translation. And so the infinitesimal version of that translation on field space is my psi hash. All right? The gauge structure identifies the vertical subspaces canonically, right? I mean, you have the gauge transformations, it already identifies you for you the orbits. But it won't identify for you how to project to the orbit and some complement to the orbit. That you need to have some choice. So the horizontal complements that I want are the ones that will project to some, the ones that project to some infinitesimal gauge invariant part. You kind of have to choose them, how to do it. So the horizontal complements identify the physical variations in a sense, but they are non-canonical. So a general field, by the way, here, we use these double struct things to differentiate what belongs to field space and things that belong to space-time. So the double struct X is like a vector in field space, and then we have the double struct L that is a Lie derivative in field space. D is just like the previous delta, so it's a function of variation, but here's an exterior derivative on field space. Right, so again, I mean, the gist of it is very easy to understand, right? We want to decompose any transformation in field, any field transformation, which you can call a process, into a part that is physical, that has the part that is projectable here, and a part that is vertical, in a manner that is covariant, because you might want to glue. That's the whole purpose of introducing the gauge connection. So you want to choose a covariant choice of horizontal subspaces. And for that, you know, people know already how to do this. It's called a connection form, this time in field space. And it's a one form. And one of the very important properties is that it's covariant. So if I choose one here, and then I gauge transform, and I say, well, what is the equivalent one there? They appropriately transform equivariantly, right? It doesn't matter which one I choose. I could have chosen that one and transformed it back here. And this vertical projector property just means that this connection form really does have as kernel the full horizontal space that you want. And here, d xi is the property that I wanted to say, well, you know, let's allow for variations also of the gauge transformations. And this becomes particularly important when we have boundaries, as I said. But this here it's generalized. It's for bulk and boundary. But they become important boundaries for the calculations of another charges, and also, well, for what I said before, for the gauge fixing. Right. So this is already, we're quite far in where we wanted to go, because, as I said, given a process, we have a physical component, which is the horizontal projection of that process, and a gauge covariant handle that will be used for gluing, which is the vertical projection of that process. So notice now that the covariance condition does not require xi of delta r equals 0, or delta xi of delta r equals 0, or the fields to be fixed at the boundary. If the condition can be satisfied, indeed, you would get, you know, just for each horizontal field here, you would get a unique horizontal field here, et cetera, and they all project to the same thing. So even if you gauge transform at the boundary, even if you use gauge transformations that depend on the field, et cetera, if you can find something like this, it will satisfy all these conditions. So in other words, the horizontal projection will mend a gap left by the standard gauge fixings, right? This is what I was saying, that if you recall, when we had a variation of the gauge fixing condition on the gauge parameter at the boundary, the two gauge transformed configurations don't match. So now we want the second thing, right, to couple, like Rovelli was saying. So suppose we have two regions, R and R bar, again, which share the boundary. So each of these regions will endow with its own field space, and we will add some restriction of the whole field space to that region. And we define this XR as the process, as the restricted process to R. So you have a global process, and you restrict it to the region R. And then what we have shown, so me, Aldo, and Florian have shown, sorry, I forgot the umlaut. is that the difference at the boundary between two descriptions of physical processes, so the translation that I mentioned between German and Brazilian Portuguese, so here's one regional physical process, here's another regional physical process, or descriptions of physical processes, and at the boundary they mismatch by a term that is not only vertical, in the sense that it's not only a gauge transformation, but it is also intrinsic to the boundary. So, you know, you could have imagined that this, these vertical projections, et cetera, they're just like the gauge fields themselves, right? They are vectors in this field space. So imagine, I could have imagined that I have an AMU at the so let's say AMU V, which I'm calling vertical, or the translation, and that it might not have been intrinsic to the boundary, in the sense that the inner product of the normal to the boundary with itself could have been different than zero. We have shown that this is not the case, that in fact the difference between these two horizontal projectors are in fact perfectly captured by a pure edge mode, as you would say, because it's a gauge valued and parallel to the boundary. Right. So another thing that we find is that the global purely physical component of a process matches the sum of the local purely physical components of the projections. That's a long sentence. I'm sorry, but it's only if this discrepancy at the boundary is zero, right? So you have the sum of the local descriptions of the physical local descriptions equal to the global physical descriptions only if you have none of these edge modes, in a sense. But this, of course, is dependent on the projections. It's not for all. It's not for all physical processes. Not for all processes. It's only particular ones that will obey this rule. But there is an injective map, right? From the difference between all the global physical modes and the sum of the local physical modes into these edge modes. This is what this shows. But I think differently from what Donnelly and Friedel have used, they can correct me at the end of the talk, not now. But these edge modes that you find here, they're not independent of the regional field configurations, right? So they're not, we don't consider them to be new independent degrees of freedom. And so the connection form itself does not need new degrees of freedom to be introduced. And for certain types of RPi, of the connection form of or way of decomposing processes in field space, this indeed will all be zero, as I will say. So if you we'll see one example of a connection constructed from a gauge field, which in general does not hold. So usually there is a discrepancy between the global physical modes and the local physical modes in this example that I'm going to show you now. So as I said before, there is no canonical decomposition of this field space, right? You have the vertical directions, which are canonical, but there's no projection that is canonical into the vertical and the horizontal. But if there is a supermetric, a natural supermetric, so a natural kinetic term, let's say, of your field, of your Lagrangian field theory, then there is a way of canonically decomposing into vertical and horizontal, because you can just ask, well, according to the supermetric, what are the things that are orthogonal to my fiber, to my orbit, right? So here, if the principal fiber bond itself is not enough, but in the presence of a supermetric, you can define something as the orthogonal complement to, you can define the horizontal subspaces as the orthogonal complement to the vertical ones. And then the question, of course, is there a natural supermetric? Well, for many theories, the kinetic terms does provide a unique gauge-compatible ultra-local supermetric, which has a lot of nice properties. This ultra-local supermetric in field space has a lot of nice properties, one of which is that one that we showed, that that the difference between horizontal projections is always restricted to the boundary. Anyway, so here's an example. So here, let's say you're in temporal gauge, you have some kinetic term. Yeah, this is the supermetric. And you can actually derive from this, you demand that something will project to you in a horizontal spaces, and you find equations for the connection form. So dA squared here is just you squared this, you contract it in the I indices. This is a one-form in field space, right? This is what this. This would be usually written as delta AI. So it's the divergence of this basis of one forms. And you see here, this is very cool, is that it comes, you didn't demand anything from the boundary. You just let everything vary. You let things vary also in the boundary, the gauge transformations, everything field dependent. And it comes automatically with some boundary condition for the projection or for the connection form. So this is a field dependent covariant boundary condition, right? This was, remember I was saying before that that there is some distinction between, you can always, in the bulk, you always impose a gauge condition at some function on A equals zero, but usually that's you can't really impose the boundary conditions on lambda by a similar thing. So here this comes out automatically, that the field-dependent covariant boundary conditions emerge. Again, there is no limitations on the gauge fixings. And this actually shows that all the gauge-related horizontal fields project to the same vector. Right.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Does it descend to all the fine metric on the base space?
Yes, because it's gauge invariant.
It's gauge invariant.
Mm-hmm.
So is it compatible with this? Does it define a Taylor structure then?
I don't know.
The base space?
I don't know.
Because if it's not, I don't understand the notion of the word natural. I would say natural would mean it would have to be compatible with the symplectic form that you wrote.
Okay, so I could give you two notions of natural. I can give you three. It depends on, right. So in fact, for Lie algebras, non-abelian theories, there is a unique ultra-local one, meaning that it doesn't have derivatives on each one of these things. This is for young Mills. For gravity, there's a one-parameter family, basically the DeWitt parameter. Usually, you get this supermetric that is ultra-local, but it has a DeWitt parameter because it takes traces as well. Individually of the elements.
So, fix some action though, that isn't true. The supermetric that sits in the secretly symplectic form, that one is just, you don't have the one parameter family.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's the other thing. Right, so the kinetic term itself single, so those are two answers. And then there are other answers that we still haven't fully developed, but these are regarding some properties that you want from this connection form. But there is a lot of naturalness related to this choice. Okay, let me go on. So there are two, I don't know if I'm going to have, well, let's, I think people here are probably more interested in other charges.
Just a clarification, it's gauge invariant also in the gravitational case or just in the Yang-Mills case?
In the gravitational case, if you have a metric for two tensors in 3+1 decomposition, then it would be invariant under spatial diffeomorphisms, for example, the DeWitt supermetric. Okay, so here is a Lagrangian spacetime density. I'll define the presymplectic potential in the usual way. You have some variation here. Let me stop and just take stock. So right now what we have done is we've defined this decomposition. I've attempted to show you that it is a good definition of horizontal or description of physical processes that don't require you to go to the gauge invariant space. I have said how it will glue regions, right? And that some of these properties of how it glues regions. Now, what we're going to look at here is if you did have physical degrees of freedom at the boundary, there are some issues that you could solve, for instance, in the occurrence of Noether charges. So this is, I think, the motivation of why you guys first came up with these edge modes, is to resolve some issues with the non-gauge invariance of Noether charges. So I'm just going to go through what we have to say in that respect here. But So this is kind of independent from the previous part that you've seen, but it's an important problem nonetheless. So I will define the presymplectic potential. Here's theta, right? This little d is the space-time exterior derivative. These are the Euler-Lagrangian equations. I'm using densitized stuff, so I don't have to write a lot. And usually, it's true that if for a gauge transformation, that, for example, doesn't admit any variation, as we wanted to admit later on, you will get some another gauge charges of this form, And where here, well, electric field E is the pullback of the Hodge of F to this partial R, and that and this squiggly lines means just up to terms proportional to the order Lagrange equation. Right. So there is an ambiguity here. You could add some closed form to the symplectic potential. And this, you know, there are questions that come up with this. Which charges would be physical? How do you tell pure gauge transformations that would have Q equal zero from physical symmetries, which you would want to have Q different than zero? And here's the main problem, I find, is that field independent or is related, field independent gauge invariance does not imply field dependent gauge invariance. So if you do have certain gauge generators that whose variation is not zero at the boundary, then you have this problem that the space-time Lie derivative, the field space Lie derivative of theta is not zero. You have some term here that depends on the variation of psi at the boundary. Here I have d, right? That's why it's at the boundary. So the charges are gauge variant if we allow changing boundary conditions. I think in the paper that they originally looked at, they used this for the symplectic potential. That's why I will focus on this.
It doesn't matter if theta is gauge dependent or not. It's
well, it does matter because you can define not only charges, but you can also define an algorithm for how to get rid of to uniquely define this. These charges by doing that. I mean, the way that they found their edge modes was by making this equal to zero with some additional term.
Yeah, that also commutes, so you can make our
peak out
the same.
Okay. Right. And I won't go through the whole story. You can check out the papers if you're interested. But it turns out that using VarPi, you just replace the variations by a horizontal variation because you want to find things that are physical or are uniquely physically represented. And then you find this unique definition with some other, and that the horizontal symplectic charge comes with some term here that depends on the connection form. You see, these are all one forms in field space. And now with this definition, it is true that it's gauge invariant. And when you look at the symplectic potential, you find just one term that is closed in field space and in, it's exact in field space and in space-time. So this horizontal symplectic geometry that you define is legitimate. It's fine. And now here, you know, it turns out that because of this property, when you want to define charges, you would find that all charges vanish, right? Which is might be a bit worrisome. So this, I'm not showing you this equation. You can look at it in the paper, but it's basically saying the horizontal charges related to some gauge parameter gives you the current related to the gauge parameter plus the current of the vertical component related to the action of that current on the field space. And because of this property, right, that I showed you is basically the property that VarPi defines a horizontal space, it would seem that the charge always vanishes. And nobody wants that. So in fact, that's not what we have. Because I lied to you before, it's field space is not a principal fiber bundle. There are kind of degenerate orbits on which the gauge action doesn't act fully, right? For example, this is an example. You have gauge orbits here that they act normally, but then at the central point they don't act. It's degenerate. They're stabilizers to the gauge transformations. And the same thing in the principal fiber bundle, or we call it reducible configuration. So for example, if you think of space times, right? Some space times that have this, Minkowski has this, or anything that is homogeneous will have these. They have actions of the group that don't transform them, right? It's just really isometries. And you have the same thing with gauge transformations, with gauge configuration. Constant.
You don't have that.
Constant.
Just constant.
just a constant, and they recover you exactly what you would expect, which are the global electric charges.
So you don't have the charges associated with the memory?
No, I don't. I don't think that's true.
But there's a question.
Well, as I said in the beginning, I don't know that we have just
so
begun
you
this.
Have global charge. You don't have.
We have global charges. We have the global charges that we have that we know from electrodynamics.
So
we haven't computed it yet. I can't answer to you yes or no.
Okay. What do you have?
We have all the electric charges that you would associate that we would normally think of in electrodynamics. You think of a region. What is the total electric charge in there that we recover?
You have or you have more? QED,
that's all that we have if you don't restrict to subsystems. So there are some caveats here. Here I have no restrictions. I'm not saying this is the situation that I'm modeling. I only want to think of restrictions in field space, let's say. So here I'm just saying I impose some boundary in a field space that I'm not restricting in any other way. Then the only thing that you get are the total electric charges of that region.
So you don't have the soft charge?
Well, if you restrict... Do you want me to repeat what I said? Sorry, Abel?
If you think about gravity, these would be killing symmetries, right? You'd have particular configurations that have killing symmetries, and that's what this would be capturing, correct?
Correct.
So if you think about soft charges, those are not killing symmetries, and so these are they're not the type of thing that are being
captured. No.
Is that right? To continue with
the question,
Not in the ADM charge, then, because they're not...
But you're misunderstanding. So that's exactly what I said. So we have, in this case, in the ADM field space, for example, you have limitations on field space, right? I mean, the boundary, you have asymptotically flat conditions. So you don't have a general field space. In the case that we are working on here, we're working on finite regions, we have no limitations on field space. You're not trying to model a set of circumstances. You are modeling any circumstance. So when we do implement conditions on field space like that, then there are more, our early computations show that the kernel of our pi becomes bigger. So we haven't done all the computations for GR or for soft charges, etc., but our expectations is that you will recover more charges if you also look at particular situations. So if you don't look at all the field space without restrictions, but if you look at field spaces with restrictions. Can I maybe finish? And then, because I think only the experts are asking questions now, so I don't know if this is... All right, so here's what I was saying, is that the quotient space is a stratified manifold, and because there exist reducible configurations. And this is also nice, you know, in a way, because it's a stratified manifold means that these places where they have stabilizers actually are represented in the physical configuration space. So there should be some physical interpretation for that. Right. And then what I was saying before showing the slides, because they were asking, is that when you work through and you put in these blind spots or these stabilizers in our charges, you do get, for example, total electric charge. And in the abelian case, it will recover the electric flux. For the non-abelian case, it requires you to be in special field configurations that basically have this property here. So you see A star is a special field configuration in psi star. It's like the killing symmetries, right? Killing symmetries, they don't occur in all spacetimes, only in particular ones. So these would be like the killing symmetries, and these would be the particular configurations in which they occur. Right, so let me just very quickly, this is heuristic, some relation to BRST.
Just a clarification about the non-abelian case. If you had like a SU2 or something, and you have to imagine that the charge is like, you have a particular charge, you would only preserve the, you know, you can think of it as a vector, a momentum vector. You'd only preserve the rotation that around that axis. Is that the right statement? Like you would only, the only charge that would be physical for you would be that one which your configuration was.
Well,
your configuration is correct. Is that correct?
Well, Well, you need to think of which ones are the stabilizers of this particular configuration, and those would have an associated charge to it, in this case. So this is a heuristic picture. So this is the gauge fixing picture that we had before. Right, you have a single section. For BRST, there is this work by Bonora and Kota Hamusino, et cetera, that they associate BRST transformations with rigid vertical transformations in some field space bundle. So this would be some related to the BRST vertical translations, a picture like that. And in our case, for the connection form, for the non-abelian case, the connection form doesn't need to form integrable surfaces. It can form distributions like this, which is to some advantage if you're actually thinking of non-perturbative non-abelian stuff. We are not yet. We're not thinking about quantum stuff, but it is good because we know that for non-abelian there is no single section that covers the whole field space. So there's also no picture like that that would cover the whole field space. You'd have something like this. And then the Grivov problem would be translated into something about the local curvature of this connection, or the local non-integrability of this connection, local in field space. Okay, anyways, but these are all pipe dreams, okay, that we haven't really done anything. So this is the comparison. Var pi is a graded, it's a one form in field space. A BRST form goes to similar. This is all Bonora and Kota Hamusino. Well, they're both related to gauge transformations. As I said, var pi avoids counting as physical boundary degrees of freedom, which are fundamentally gauge. BRST ghosts also avoid counting as physical. This is the Kugojima quartet mechanism, avoid counting as physical degrees of freedom that are fundamentally gauge as well. And in fact, we have for a vertical derivative, we have the same transformation properties as BRST. Here, of course, these are only the vertical transformations. We would also have the extra horizontal transformations that give you the curvature. So you could see this as a unison of three different previous works and the generalization to the presence of boundaries. So there's Bonora and Kota Hamusino, which does this BRST as vertical automorphisms, and then there's Singer and Wilkowski and DeWitt that really do think of something like a form in field space, like a connection form in field space. It's related, and we have generalized it to the presence of boundaries. This we only learned as we went through. Okay, so the conclusions are the following. When introducing boundaries in gauge theories, a number of issues arise. On the conceptual side, we need to find a way to couple the physical information residing in adjacent regions. I think this was clear that regional gauge fixed or gauge invariant degrees of freedom don't couple well. And on the technical side, I should have said this is a bias. It might be wrong because it might be that actually you need gauge degrees of freedom at boundaries to become physical, as per Laurent and Will. But here we were trying to avoid that, so we managed to avoid that to a certain extent, that these boundary degrees of freedom don't carry physical charges. And we did this by introducing a covariant structure in each regional field space. And so, of course, there are many more things to be done. For example, we would like to calculate entanglement entropy using these things, as they have done with their edge modes. We would like to extend it for diffeomorphisms, which we haven't done yet. Is there some relation to the BV-BFV framework? And this is also something that I was answering questions beforehand, to adapt the formalism to restrictions in field space. For example, when you have stringent boundaries conditions imposed on field content to describe particular subsystems. For instance, as asymptotically flat is used to try to describe isolated subsystems. And this will change the derivation of our pi in the structure of this, so it will create more charges. And I don't think we do have anything to say about supertranslation charges. This is, again, a pipe dream. I haven't really talked about the matter-based var pi. It's called the Higgs connection. This is very interesting. I really recommend you to look at the paper if you like this framework. It's really related to the Higgs mechanism and their, well, other interesting open opportunities. All right, thank you very much. We are what, sorry?
Yeah, I'm just seeing kind of the same question. You're looking at the same thing. I mean, how do you group stuff? How do you group regions when you have a gauge symmetry? But your framework is really different. And so, can you summarize kind of the. I mean, you make this completely differently, so why is it better? Why is it, I mean, maybe the more of the fire? But so, what's the difference? I mean, why?
I don't know if it's better. So we didn't introduce new scalar fields, for example. We didn't introduce that, right? We only use the decomposition in field space that depends on the fields themselves. They introduce a new field. They have more charges. You might like that. So Laurent, you know, for instance, would think that these new degrees of freedom that you put at the boundaries are related to soft charges. In our case, we don't have that. We have no, in the general case, we only have, for instance, the total electric charge. Or we only get charges where our results agree with, for example, Barnish and Brandt, that they only find charges related to reducibility parameters. So for instance, we only have these charges when we have Killing fields, because again, we have no restriction. If you have a restriction to model particular subsystems, you would get more charges. The differences are in terms of the charges that you get. So for example, we glue as well as they glue, but we don't have charges associated to extra degrees of freedom because we don't introduce them. I think that would be the summary of that.
And are you able to get the non-commutative structure? Like if they get the non-commutative electric field and stuff like that, or the flux in loop and loop feature, a non-commutative flux, do you get also similar fields?
I don't know. Do you want to work it out with me? We can try to do it afterwards. We haven't tried. There's a lot here, especially about the Higgs connection. The paper's already 70 pages long, and it's quite recent. So there's a lot to develop.
Another thing that this framework addresses, which is like not about necessarily about glowing or things like this, it recovers a lot in the unified language to these other problems in a sense. Many constructions done in the context of gauge theories in general. So this Wilkowski geometric action can be nicely explained in terms of field space autonomies of this connection. So he didn't have the time to talk about that. And so it builds bridges with other.
Right, like Dirac dressing. Dirac dressing comes, it's really just the connection that I was showing for you. It is integrable in the case of QED. And it just really would give you a direct dressing if you were looking at the horizontal projection. So it does build these bridges.
Usually, I mean, dressing is a choice of self-modes. The reason you need charges at the boundary, one of the physical reasons is the memory. It's the fact that there are physical phenomena that induces a charge transformation. These charge transformations are self-charges.
But how did people derive the memory effects before finding out boundary degrees of freedom?
I'm not sure what you're asking. The memory effect is
yes.
The memory effect.
Huh? Right.
Yes.
It can do it, they did it independently. Right.
Yeah, but you can understand the memory effect as a flow of self-charge.
Okay, sure. But you can understand it without it. So maybe that's what we'll get here.
There's sort of implicitly there.
It's not because the name was not used before that it was not.
But this doesn't mean, for example, that we cannot compute phases associated to processes. This would be like out-of-bound phases in field space given by one of these connections.
But therefore, you would have one numbers labeling these different phases. And that's
At some point,
so
you will have to introduce that guy.
I don't want to fight about
it's not a question of better. It's like there's been the field has evolved in the past 5 years. It's suddenly revealing the importance and the physics associated with the boundary charges and the soft charges.
If we do recover these things through holonomies, then we won't need to have implemented these other degrees of freedom like kappa that you have. That's all. Maybe we do recover the same thing.
Yeah, it's great to make it coherent.
Is it just... Yeah.
I don't understand.
Is it just that what conditions the configuration, few configurations themselves have to satisfy versus then trying to anticipate the charges? I mean... Because
maybe.
In some sense, you get the charges here by saying, okay, I mean, there's certain field configuration, there's certain fibers that are just degenerate,
mm-hmm.
right? And then if I play this game, I find that there's the global charge there. Okay. Then you find that if I have these asymptotic conditions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's happening there is you also have some privileged fibers, right? In field
right.
Again, the space of metrics. And I presumably you're doing something similar. Obtain the soft charges the way people did, like the way Campilli and Lata did, for example.
Right. I think that's probably accurate. So what I
suspect that what's happening here is that you're sort of pushing what you could put at the level of charges to what's happening, the kinds of configurations, the kinds of fallout conditions you can impose in field space.
Exactly. I think that's probably accurate. So what we're doing is, in fact, it's just standard gauge theory. We're just, you know, it is gauge theory. We're just looking at it with boundaries and in field space. We're not implementing new things.
Well, I have a very simple question.
Yeah.
What I don't understand in your framework is simply what your notion of gauge transformation is somewhat the prime starting point of what you're considering. While the way I understand gauge is in a like more Hamiltonian description as the general directions of the prism-blade two-form. And then it just so happens that some transformations in phase space that you would naively call gauge are not gauge transformations in the Hamiltonian sense, hence they lead to these new boundary charges that William and Laurent are studying. So what I'm asking is, do you not have, how do you see, how do you understand gauge transformations in the Hamiltonian picture in this setup? So what you call gauge, is it like a degenerate direction in phase space?
So
in the presence of boundaries.
In the presence, yes. So I mean, so this the symplectic form that we find is equal to the same one plus minus this, and now it has properties that it also admits field-dependent gauges because you're talking about flows in fields for Hamiltonians, etc. But you need to tell me whether you will admit gauge parameters that also depend on the phase space or not, and that changes when you have boundaries. I can show you why it changes. If you have a gauge parameter that is field dependent when you have boundaries, the flow its flow and field space changes. So very quickly. So suppose you have a full H total, and you smear it by some lambda that it will now depend on field space, and it has some bulk component. I'm calling it B. And lambda, and this is the one that you want to set. Well, this is the. I'll tell you later. I think this is. This might detract a little bit from the. I don't know how much people want me to do this. It depends. Well, the short answer is it depends if you include what the kernel will be, depends whether you include field space dependence or not in the gauge parameters. And therefore, this is something that homogenizes this aspect of it. It's the same whether you included them or not.
Any more questions? Sorry. Let's thank.